This is For the Record program number 1130, Biopsyop Apocalypse Now, Part 6, The Magic Virus Theory, Part 3. And this is being recorded on May the 18th of the year 2020. And I am Dave Emery. This is yet another live program in the series of broadcasts about the COVID-19 outbreak. And we're going to be dealing with some things that are frustrating and some that are terrifying. I'm going to plunge right in. There is a new program that has been announced, or a recent program that has been announced by Donald Trump called Operation Warp Speed, and it is to develop a vaccine for the COVID-19. And it is designed to produce a vaccine very, very quickly, and I think that there are a number of problems with that. It would certainly be very nice to have a vaccine very quickly, but the key is how safe will that vaccine be? And, well, that is indeed a question. Operation Warp Speed is the focal point of a New York Times story from May 15th of 2020 by David E. Sanger and Maggie Haberman and Noah Weiland. The article is entitled, Trump Vows Vaccine by End of Year and Mobilizes Military to Help. And key points in this. The head of the program is Dr. Moncef, M-O-N-C-E-F, Slaoui, S-L-A-O-U-I. Dr. Slaoui served on the board of Moderna, a biotechnology company that has an experimental coronavirus vaccine that just entered phase 2 of clinical trials to determine if it is effective. As the chairman of the Moderna board's Product Development Committee, Dr. Slaoui might have been privy to the early indications of tests of whether the company's approach appeared promising now that it is being injected into human subjects. Now, in For the Record 1119 of 1120, we looked at the fact that Moderna is heavily subsidized by DARPA. In fact, it touts its financing by DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, as a major plus in touting itself. And once again, Dr. Slaoui served on the board of Moderna, a biotechnology company that has an experimental coronavirus vaccine that just entered phase 2 of clinical trials to determine if it is effective. As the chairman of the Moderna board's Product Development Committee, he was on Friday, Dr. Slaoui might have been privy to the early indications of tests of whether the company's approach appeared promising now that it is being injected into human subjects. Skipping down, Dr. Slaoui, now a venture capitalist, said that he had, quote, recently seen early data from a clinical trial with a coronavirus vaccine, and these data made me feel even more confident that we will be able to deliver a few hundred million doses of vaccine, unquote, enough to inoculate much of the United States by the end of 2020. Now, bear in mind, again, that Moderna is heavily subsidized by DARPA. Note the following. Mr. Slaoui will serve as the chief advisor on the effort, and General Gustav, G-U-S-T-A-V-E-F, Perna, P-E-R-N-A, a four-star general who is in charge of the Army Materiel Command, will be the chief operating officer. And look at who basically facilitated the appointment of Dr. Perna, General Perna. General Perna, who ran the Army's complex supply chain, said that he was asked by General Mark A. Milley, M-I-L-L-E-Y, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to help run the manufacturing logistics related to vaccine development. The point being here that this might be seen as something of medical martial law, not literally martial law, but when top elements of the military command are basically working with the crash program to develop a vaccine, that is not encouraging simply because the military's skill is not public health maintenance. The military's skill is warfighting, and that involves basically two things in its essence, killing people and destroying property. And while Generals Milley and Perna might be excellent at warfighting, their skills in the public health field, I think, are debatable under the circumstances. The fact that Moderna, more about that in a minute, is a DARPA-funded company, and the fact that Dr. Slally was in charge of their product development committee up until just a short time ago, and assures us that he has seen the preliminary data from a clinical trial with a coronavirus vaccine, perhaps the one that Moderna is working on, and that he is confident that we will be able to deliver a few hundred million doses of vaccine by the end of 2020. Now, superficially, that sounds good. However, there are a number of things to consider. First of all, from Business Insider of March 16th of 2020, this by Kieran, K-I-E-R-A-N, Corcoran, C-O-R-A-N, quote, the ex-pharma executive leading Trump's COVID-19 vaccine program has $10 million in stock options for a company getting federal funding. What company might that be? Moderna, of course. The former pharma executive, excerpting this article, the former pharma executive tapped by President Donald Trump to lead the federal government's hunt for a COVID-19 vaccine has more than $10 million in stock options in one of the companies receiving federal funding. Described across four separate filings, Slally has 155,438 options in Moderna. The stake is worth $10,366,000 at Moderna's current share price. This is as of mid-March, 2 months ago, $66.69 at the time of publication. Moderna's shares have almost tripled in value during 2020. The 66.69 figure represents an increase of 184% from the $23.46 it was trading for on January 1st. The point being that Dr. Slally has more than $10 million in Moderna stock. He was the head of their product development committee. He has spoken publicly about being very optimistic, having seen an unnamed company's clinical trials for a coronavirus vaccine. I think it is not an unreasonable suspicion that that might be Moderna, that we will have a millions of doses of a vaccine ready by the end of 2020. A number of things to take into account in that regard. First of all, no vaccine has ever been developed for human use in less than 4 years, and this one is going to be ostensibly ready in less than one. We'll talk about the type of vaccine in a minute. The offices of which General Perna and Monsieur Slally will be operating on will be at the Department of Health and Human Services under Alex Azar, capital A-Z-A-R, a former pharmaceutical industry lobbyist. And the overall recruitment process came from none other than Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law and minister without portfolio, an individual who knows absolutely nothing about public health. And that is less than encouraging. Now, about Moderna, again, bearing in mind that a four-star general will be working as the partner with Dr. Slally from Moderna, and that Dr. Slally certainly has literally a vested interest in Moderna's vaccine being successful. If it is marketed, its value is going to soar. It already has received over $400 million, I believe that is, in, yes, from that Business Insider article, Part of this sharp increase was fueled by an injection of more than $400 million from the federal government to assist trials of a coronavirus vaccine. If, in fact, that vaccine does become the go-to vaccine, it is a safe bet that Dr. Slowey's $10 million-plus investment will increase considerably. Now, a thing that is alarming, bearing in mind, again, that no human vaccine has been approved or developed in less than 4 years, and this virus is proving very, very problematic in a number of ways. It has mutated many, many times, or there have been mutations, variations of the virus that have gone into circulation. One of the things the scientific authorities have not taken into account is that somebody may actually be doing this, not just developing the mutations, but vectoring. More about that later. Moderna's vaccine is an mRNA vaccine. That is a nucleic acid vaccine. Specifically, mRNA refers to messenger RNA. That type of vaccine, although it has been seen as very promising, has never been tried on human beings before. I should stress in this regard that I am not an anti-vaxxer. I think that vaccines are fundamental for maintaining a public health. That having been said, like any product, vaccines have to be properly vetted. In past discussions with Ed Haslam and in some discussions on our own, we have spoken about the contamination of the polio vaccine with the SV40 cancer-causing virus that produces multiple types of cancer in human beings and has apparently been the source or the cause of a soft tissue cancer epidemic in the so-called baby boomers. Again, if a vaccine is not properly vetted, and I'm not an anti-vaxxer by any means, it can be devastating. And rushing an mRNA or DNA vaccine into production seems to be a very, very foolish thing to do. We're going to excerpt next an article, a very important article that was the focal point for the record programs 1119 and 1120. This is from the Last American Vagabond blog of July 30th of 2020 by Whitney, that's a woman, Webb, W-E-B-B, as important a story as I think I have ever read. It is titled, Bats, Gene Editing, and Bioweapons. Recent DARPA experiments raise concerns amid coronavirus outbreak. And it talks about the major DARPA research into bat-borne coronaviruses and viruses in and around China as well. As we saw when we covered this article and as we will review, among the DARPA-related institutions that are in China are the Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases, whose Fort Detrick, Maryland facility was closed down by the CDC in early August of last year. Also, the DARPA-funded Duke University. Both have decades-old links to the Wuhan Institute of Virology that has been the focal point of Trump administration and other countries' claims about the origin of the coronavirus. More about that later. Now, from the Last American Vagabond article of January 30th by Whitney Webb, again, bats, gene editing and bioweapons, recent DARPA experiments raise concerns amid coronavirus outbreak. Reread the following. The second pharmaceutical company that was selected by CEPI to develop a vaccine for the new coronavirus is Moderna Incorporated, which will develop a vaccine for the novel coronavirus of concern in collaboration with the U.S. National Institutes of Health, and which will be funded entirely by CEPI. As we've seen, the government itself has given a lot of money to this program. The vaccine in question, as opposed to Inovio's DNA vaccine, will be a messenger RNA or mRNA vaccine. though different than a DNA vaccine. mRNA vaccines still use genetic material, quote, to direct the body's cells to produce intracellular, membrane, or secreted proteins. Moderna's mRNA treatments, including its mRNA vaccines, were largely developed using a $25 million grant from DARPA, and it often touts its strategic alliance with DARPA in press releases. More about the Moderna DNA vaccine. Both DNA and mRNA vaccines involve the introduction of foreign and engineered genetic material into a person's cells, and past studies have found that such vaccines, quote, possess significant unpredictability and a number of inherent harmful potential hazards, unquote, and that, again quoting, there is inadequate knowledge to define either the probability of unintended events or the consequences of genetic modifications, unquote. Nonetheless, the climate of fear surrounding the coronavirus outbreak could be enough for the public and private sector to develop and distribute such controversial treatments due to fear about the epidemic potential of the current outbreak. And of course, with a fellow who is formerly in charge of Moderna's product development committee, now heading up Operation Warp Speed, and a fellow who has more than $10 million invested in Moderna stock, which will undoubtedly soar if Moderna gets the contract, there is reason to be very, very afraid here. Again, no human vaccine has ever been developed in less than 4 years. The type of vaccine that is in question here, both mRNA, messenger RNA, and DNA vaccines, have never been tried on human beings, or never been used on human beings. There are fast-tracked phase two human trials underway as we speak. However, the long-term effects of changing the genetic material in the human being's cells have yet to be determined. Fast-tracking something like this appears to be altogether foolish. And again, I think with Donald Trump obviously wanting to be reelected, touting the success of Operation Warp Speed, we've developed a vaccine in record time, we're going to save the American people, and so on and so forth, that would be a very powerful campaign propaganda tool for Donald Trump, if in fact such a vaccine has not been properly vetted, and it seems really unlikely that such a vaccine could be properly vetted in the very small amount of time between now and the end of the year. I think there is reason to be more than a little concerned. In the background, or perhaps even in the foreground of this, bearing in mind, too, the high-ranking Pentagon connections to the development of this vaccine. Again, working with Dr. Slally will be General Perna, a four-star general whose position, whose rise to that position was facilitated by the General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Now, Pentagon interest in genetics has involved some really terrifying things. Back to the Whitney Webb article. Concerns about Pentagon experiments with biological weapons have garnered renewed media attention, particularly after it was revealed in 2017 that DARPA was the top funder of the controversial gene drive technology, which has the power to permanently alter the genetics of entire populations while targeting others for extinction. One more time. Concerns about Pentagon experiments with biological weapons have garnered renewed media attention, particularly after it was revealed in 2017 that DARPA was the top funder of the controversial gene drive technology, which has the power to permanently alter the genetics of entire populations while targeting others for extinction. At least two of DARPA's studies using this controversial technology were classified and, quote, focused on the potential military application of gene drive technology and use of gene drives in agriculture, unquote, according to media reports. Skipping down. Co-director of the ETC group, Jim Thomas, said that this technology may be used as a biological weapon. Quote, gene drives are a powerful and dangerous new technology, and potential biological weapons could have disastrous impacts on peace, food security, and the environment, especially if misused. The fact that gene drive development is now being primarily funded and structured by the U.S. military raises alarming questions about this entire field. Skipping down. The therapies being developed by Inovio, Moderna, and the University of Queensland in Australia are in alignment with DARPA's objectives regarding gene editing and vaccine technology. For instance, in 2015, DARPA geneticist Colonel Daniel Wattendorf described how the agency was investigating, quote, a new method of vaccine production that would involve giving the body instructions for making certain antibodies. Because the body would be its own bioreactor, the vaccine could be produced much faster than traditional methods, and the result would be a higher level of protection. And noting this couple sentences about gene driving, gene drive technology has the power to permanently alter the genetics of entire populations while targeting others for extinction. Do any of these vaccines, in fact, have gene drive potential? And again, at the very minimum, it seems that these products should be much, much more rigorously tested than I think they are likely to be. In our last program, we had an article, we highlighted an article from the BBC from January 21st of 1999, more than 21 years ago, called Health Genetic Weapons Alert, and it talked about the development of gene editing technology, of the ability to create any virus in a laboratory from scratch. And in this article, they quoted Dr. Vivian Nathanson, who was the British Medical Association Head of Health Policy Research. Quote, the history of humanity is a history of war. Scientific advances quickly lead to developments in weapons technology. Biotechnology and genetic knowledge are equally open to this type of malign use. And the report issued by the British Medical Association, Biotechnology, Weapons, and Humanity, had the following quote. The BMA report warns that legitimate research into microbiological agents and genetically targeted therapeutic agents could be difficult to distinguish from research geared towards developing more effective weapons. And that is something that needs to be very carefully considered in connection with not only the Moderna vaccine, but other things as well. Reviewing very quickly from a couple of articles we read into the record in our last program. First of all, from GM Watch, a publication that studies and is critical of genetically modified organisms. This by Claire Robinson, Claire, C-L-A-I-R-E, was the COVID-19 virus genetically engineered. And this is in response to a Nature Medicine article from March 17th of this year that has become sort of the Warren report of, well, no, this virus could not have been made in a laboratory, as we have seen. And by the way, we're going to come back to Dr. Ralph Barich in a big way. Any virus can be made from scratch in a laboratory, given the technology that Dr. Vivian Nathanson and the British Medical Association were warning about back in January of 1999. The 1918 flu pandemic virus was resynthesized in 2000, or was synthesized from scratch. It was an extinct virus. This was in 2005. And Dr. Ralph Berich, again, we'll come back to him, has been commissioned to synthesize the SARS-CoV-2 virus that is behind the COVID-19 outbreak from its in its entirety from scratch. By the way, in connection with vaccines, before we leave that, there have been a number of mutations in the SARS-CoV-2, including its spike protein that enable it to affect genes and infect cells, I should say. If, in fact, a vaccine is developed and creates antibodies to that type of virus or otherwise neutralizes it, but a mutated virus with a different type of protein spike goes into circulation, and one appears to be circulating, yea, verily, even as we speak, that could render that vaccine completely ineffective. Now, from the GM Watch article from April 22nd, speaking of the Nature Medicine article, to put it simply, the authors are saying that SARS-CoV-2 was not deliberately engineered because if it were, it would have been designed differently. However, the London-based molecular geneticist Dr. Michael Antonio commented that this line of reasoning fails to take into account that there are a number of laboratory-based systems that can select for high-affinity RBD variants that are able to take into account the complex environment of a living organism. This complex environment may impact the efficiency with which the SARS-CoV spike protein can find the ACE2 receptor and bind to it. An RBD, that's receptor binding domain, an RBD selected via these more realistic real-world experimental systems would be just as, quote, ideal, unquote, or even more so for human ACE2 binding than any receptor binding domain that a computer model could predict. The Nature Medicine article, to make a long story short, used a computer model and said because the SARS-CoV-2 did not correspond to that ideal computer-generated model, it wouldn't have been made in a laboratory. Dr. Antonio goes on to comment, and crucially, it would likely be different in amino acid sequence from the computer model. So the fact that SARS-CoV-2 doesn't have the same RBD amino acid sequence as the one that the computer program predicted in no way rules out the possibility that it was genetically engineered. And Dr. Antonio goes on to point out something else. There is another method by which an enhanced infectivity virus can be engineered in the lab. A well-known alternative process that could have been used has the cumbersome name of, quote, directed iterative evolutionary selection process, unquote. In this case, it would involve using genetic engineering to generate a large number of randomly mutated versions of the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein receptor binding domain, which could then be selected for strong binding to the ACE2 receptor and consequently high infectivity of human cells. One more time. There is another method by which an enhanced infectivity virus can be engineered in the lab. A well-known alternative process that could have been used has the cumbersome name of directed iterative evolutionary selection process. In this case, it would involve using genetic engineering to generate a large number of randomly mutated versions of the SARS CoV spike protein receptor binding domain, which would then be selected for strong binding to the ACE2 receptor and consequently high infectivity of human cells. Such a directed iterative evolutionary selection process is a frequently used method in laboratory research, so there is little or no possibility that the Nature Medicine article authors haven't heard of it, not least as it is considered so scientifically important that its inventors were awarded the Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 2018. So again, given that, I think we can assume that the authors of the Nature Medicine article were certainly aware of that, and yet they did not take that into account in connection with the with the article that they wrote for Nature Medicine, and that has now become basically the Warren report of the virus couldn't have been made in the laboratory. Another key point, several key points really were made in another GM Watch article, this from April 27th of 2020. Another expert challenges assertions that SARS-CoV-2 was not genetically engineered. And in this we find Professor Stuart Newman, professor of cell biology and anatomy at New York Medical College, says that a key argument used to deny that it could be a genetically engineered strain that escaped from a laboratory actually points to the exact opposite. In other words, it indicates that SARS-CoV-2 could be genetically engineered and that it could have escaped from a lab. As Adam Loring, an associate professor of microbiology, immunology, and infectious diseases at the University of Michigan Medical School, has noted, Anderson's paper argues that, quote, the SARS-CoV-2 virus has some key differences in specific genes relative to previously identified coronaviruses, the ones a laboratory would be working with. This constellation of changes makes it unlikely that it is the result of a laboratory escape, unquote. But Professor Newman says that this is totally unconvincing because, again, quoting, the key differences, unquote, were in regions of the coronavirus spike protein that were the subject of genetic experiments in labs around the world, mainly in the U.S. and China, for 2 decades. And still more. In an email interview with GM Watch, Newman, who is editor-in-chief of the journal Biological Theory and co-author with Tina Stevens of the book Biotech Juggernaut, amplified this speculation by noting, quote, the Nature Medicine paper points to variations in 2 sites of the spike protein of the new coronavirus that the authors claim must have arisen by natural selection in the wild. However, genetic engineering of one of these sites, the ACE2 receptor binding domain, has been proposed since 2005 in order to help generate vaccines against these viruses. It is puzzling that the authors of the Nature Medicine commentary did not cite this paper, which appeared in the prominent journal Science. Moreover, Newman added, the second site that Anderson et al. Assert arose by natural means, a target of enzyme cleavage not usually found in this class of viruses, was in fact introduced by genetic engineering in a similar coronavirus paper that they do cite. This was done to explore mechanisms of pathogenicity, and the point that needs to be made again is that a couple of points here in that GM Watch article also points out such enhanced infectivity research is carried out on viruses all over the world and not just in China to investigate their behavior and to develop vaccines and other therapies as well as for biodefense purposes, in other words, of defending against biological warfare. And bearing in mind a sentence from that BBC article, the British Medical Association report warns that legitimate research into microbiological agents and genetically targeted therapeutic agents could be difficult to distinguish from research geared towards developing more effective weapons. As we will see, not only do Duke University, backed by DARPA, and the Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases have decades-long links to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. But the program that has been focused on by the Chinese did it, they made it in the laboratory, or they were experimenting with it in the laboratory and it got out, that program was a joint Chinese and American program. In addition to Dr. Shi Zheng in China, who was working on that was a woman, I believe, Dr. Ralph Barish, the aforementioned Dr. Ralph Barish of the University of North Carolina, was working on that same project. That project that we spoke about in 2015 was a joint Chinese and American project. Now, and for the record, 11/18, and in for the record, 11/21. We spoke about the Military World Games in Wuhan, China, that began the same day as a very interesting symposium in New York, talking about a hypothetical pandemic coming from a bat-borne coronavirus. And it began the same day as the Military World Games in Wuhan. The Chinese have suggested that perhaps the U.S. military brought the virus to Wuhan through those games. I think they may have been dropping a little hint. It may have been elements of the American military, or it may very well have been that someone, perhaps from the military, perhaps from the CIA, or perhaps from somewhere else, perhaps some of the ferocious, deadly, post-apartheid underground Brüderbund elements in Die Organisation, or the Third Force, as it was referred to, that we talked about in 11/28, may have been involved. It remains to be seen whether some of the athletes who caught that virus, apparently in Wuhan, we're about to talk about that, caught the virus in Wuhan, how they caught it, and perhaps they may even have been infected before they got to Wuhan. A person can take between 2 days and 2 weeks before they become symptomatic, if they were symptomatic at all after being infected. And there certainly is a mounting body of evidence that at least some European military athlete contingents at the Wuhan World Games were in fact infected. From the Daily Mail of May 6th of 2020 by Ross Ibbotson, IBBETSON, did European athletes catch coronavirus while competing at the Military World Games in October? French delegation returned with fevers after fishmonger is found to have been contaminated in December. French athletes believe they caught coronavirus at the Military World Games in Wuhan in October 20th before the first recorded case in China. It comes after it was revealed that Frenchman Amirouche Hamar, 43, had been infected with COVID-19 outside Paris as early as December. He was not an athlete, skipping down. French media report that sick athletes were also noted in some other delegations, including the Swedish delegation, with people returning to Sweden with strong fevers. About 100 people from the Swedish Armed Forces attended the World Military Games in Wuhan and stayed in the city for 2 weeks. There were also some Spanish athletes that were apparently infected. From the Olive Press blog of May 8th of 2020 by Dimitris, D-I-M-I-T-R-I-S, Kounsidis, K-O-U-I-N-T-S-I-B-I-S, coronavirus symptoms following the World Military Games in Wuhan in October of 2019, skipping down. According to ministry sources who spoke to El Mundo, two athletes displayed flu-like symptoms during the games between October 17th and 28th, and two others displayed them upon their return to Spain and also Italy. From Football Italia, from May 7th of 2020, athletes sick in Wuhan back in October. Some athletes who were at the Military World Games in Wuhan in October of 2019 claimed, quote, everyone was sick, unquote, with symptoms reminiscent of COVID-19 2 months before the confirmed case. Also about the Italian contingent from Web24 News for May 7th of 2020 by Dimitar, D-I-M-I-T-A-R, Dilkoff, D-I-L-K-O-F-F, copyright by Dimitar Dilkoff. Military World Games in Wuhan in focus. We are all sick. Again, about widespread apparent coronavirus infection in the Italian contingent at the Military World Games in Wuhan. Also reports of French, Swedish, and Spanish athletes being infected as well. The epidemiology of this virus does not make a lot of sense. A lot of people are puzzling over this. I also should add perhaps very quickly that scientists and doctors who are poo-pooing the notion that the virus may have been created in a laboratory or could have been created in a laboratory are not necessarily doing so for cynical reasons. Some of them may be reacting to what Professor Peter Dale Scott spoke of as a level one cover-up in the JFK assassination, with elements of the conspiracy having deliberately structured Lee Harvey Oswald to appear to have been ultimately a Soviet and or Castro-Cuban pawn. Many people who poo-pooed the notion of a conspiracy in the JFK assassination did so out of the sincere desire to avoid a third world war. That may also be one of the considerations in poo-pooing the notion that the virus could have been created in a laboratory. However, they are not really, it doesn't appear to me they are really considering the possibility that it may have come from this, that it was deliberately created. And again, as I have noted and as we will return to in a future program, this outbreak does not occur in a vacuum, but rather in the context of a well-documented overt and covert operation, full court press against China. And China has taken a huge amount of bad press around the world, has bad PR around the world, in addition to taking a huge hit to its own economy. The notion that China did this deliberately, which some elements associated with the Trump administration are touting, simply defies evidence. But about the strange epidemiology from the New York Times of May 16th of 2020, this is by Mike Baker. When did the coronavirus arrive in the U.S.? Here is a review of the evidence, skipping down. In San Jose, California, tissue sampling from a woman who died on February 6th revealed that she was probably the first known person in the U.S. whose death was linked to the coronavirus, a strong sign that the virus may have been circulating in that part of Northern California in January. Bear in mind that a French fish seller apparently got sick in early December in France. Speaking of that case in early February, but was it part of a large previously unrecognized outbreak? Dr. George Rutherford, R-U-T-H-E-R-F-O-R-D, a professor of epidemiology and biostatistics at the University of California, San Francisco, theorized that perhaps the woman who worked for a company that had an office in Wuhan was one of only a small number of people who contracted the virus at that time, and that transmissions probably petered out for some reason. Otherwise, he said, the region would have had a much bigger outbreak. Well, I don't know why we haven't had a larger outbreak, but the statement here, the transmissions probably petered out for some reason, is the epidemiological equivalent of whatever. It doesn't make sense. And indeed, I'm not finding fault with Dr. Rutherford. The epidemiology of this virus worldwide does not make sense if you look at it. Plus, there is such a body of contradictions in the scientific literature. Some say that the virus is mutating very quickly. Some say it's mutating very slowly. So it depends on who you read. There are many variants of the virus, some of them more infectious than others, although virologists are disputing that, and they are overtaking virus mutations in some of the areas that have been infected. Also, speaking of Dr. Trevor Bedford, this same New York Times article by Mike Baker from May 16th. Dr. Bedford said he also believed this was the more likely scenario, noting that up to half of people with coronavirus infections have no symptoms. There could have been a tiny number of isolated coronavirus cases among travelers to the U.S. in December, Dr. Bedford said, but it is pretty clear that none of them spread. In part, scientists can tell that by looking at the genomic footprints of each case. But another clue is the rapid rate at which the virus spreads, Dr. Rutherford said. It appears that early in the outbreak, one infection was spreading to about four other people on average, with an incubation period for new infections of about 4 days. So a case seeded in December would rapidly quadruple through new generations and most likely grow exponentially to millions of cases from a single unbroken chain of transmission by the end of February. Researchers are not seeing any chains that appear to go that far back. And so why? If researchers are not seeing any chains that appear to go that far back, what is going on? What happened with that case in San Jose? The cases appeared to peter out for some reason. That's the epidemiological equivalent of whatever. In the written description for this program, I will have a New York Times story talking about how the outbreak in America apparently spread outward from New York. In past programs, we have looked at a random study that showed that up to 20% of New York people, of New Yorkers rather, about 1.5 million that would be, have been infected by the virus. Most of them got moderately sick or very sick. So, again, the epidemiology doesn't make sense. That's a lot of people, and we are being told that the virus all spread out in the U.S. from New York. New York was the epicenter of the virus. And for the record, 1128, I hypothesized that that may have well have been because New York was vectored, perhaps even using the subway vector that was tested with a harmless microorganism back in 1965. But in any event, I don't have the definitive answers. The weird epidemiology is something that needs to be more closely examined. And I think one of the things that needs to be examined is the possibility that people are deliberately spreading the virus and that there have been some mutations that have been deliberately created. I also wonder about cross-vectoring. Is some of this weird epidemiology, the fact that many people have been infected, show no symptoms? Certainly some of the people who have been very sick or died have other medical conditions, including members of minority groups who are medically beset, I guess one could say. But there are a great many questions that have yet to be answered. Bear in mind that Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, is a Koch brothers protege, and that China is the world leader in green technology, if in fact their green technology either becomes the inspiration for or is actually marketed to many countries. That threatens the fossil fuel interests of the Koch brothers, who have been major financiers of climate change denial. Pompeo has been claiming that there is enormous evidence that the virus came from a Chinese laboratory. From ABC News of May 3rd of 2020, article by Ashley Brown, Connor Finnegan, and Jack Arnholz, A-R-N-H-O-L-Z. Pompeo says enormous evidence, unquote, for unproven theory that coronavirus came from lab, unquote. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said there are, quote, enormous, unquote, signs that the novel coronavirus outbreak originated in a biomedical laboratory in Wuhan, China, the city where cases first exploded. I can tell you that there is a significant amount of evidence that this came from that laboratory in Wuhan, Pompeo said on ABC's This Week, Sunday. Do you think they intentionally released that virus? Or was it an accident in the lab, co-anchor Martha Raddatz pressed? If they intentionally released that virus, they were basically trying to commit national economic and public relations suicide, because it did not only a lot of damage to the Chinese economy, but to their image abroad. And how did Mike Pompeo answer that frankly, stupid question. I can't answer your question about that, he said, because the Chinese Communist Party has refused to cooperate with world health experts. Well, that does not compute. In fact, there has been massive sharing of scientific and medical information by the Chinese scientific and medical community and their cohorts abroad, including sharing the genomes of the viruses as well as relevant scientific discoveries. Pompeo did say in this article that he agreed that the virus was not genetically modified. Well, in fact, it could have been. Another interesting story from the Daily Telegraph, that is a Sydney, Australia tabloid that is produced by, drumroll fanfare, Rupert Murdoch, or is owned by Rupert Murdoch. From the Sydney Daily Telegraph on May 4th of 2020 by Sherry S-H-A-R-R-I Markson, M-A-R-K-S-O-N, Coronavirus New South Wales dossier lays out case against China bat virus program. Skipping down. It can also be revealed that the Australian government trained and funded a team of Chinese scientists who belonged to a laboratory which went on to genetically modify deadly coronaviruses that could be transmitted from bats to humans and had no cure, and is now the subject of a probe into the origins of COVID-19. By the way, the scientist is S-H-I, Shi Zhengli, Z-H-E-N-G-L-I, probably mispronouncing that. Skipping down. This is interesting. It notes a 2013 study conducted by a team of researchers, including Dr. Shi, who collected a sample of horseshoe bat feces from a cave in Yunnan Province, China, which was later found to contain the virus 96.2% identical to SARS-CoV-2, the virus that caused COVID-19. The research dossier also references work done by the team to synthesize SARS-like coronaviruses to analyze whether they could be transmissible from bats to mammals. This means they were altering parts of the virus to test whether it was transmissible to different species. Their November 2015 study, done in conjunction with the University of North Carolina, concluded that the SARS-like virus could jump directly from bats to humans, and there was no treatment that could help, skipping down. One of Dr. Shi's co-authors on that paper, Professor Ralph Barich from North Carolina University, said in an interview with Science Daily at the time, quote, "This virus is highly pathogenic, and treatments developed against the original SARS virus in 2002 and the ZMapp drugs used to fight Ebola failed to neutralize and control this particular virus." Dr. Xi's protege, Peng Zhu, now the head of the Bat Virus Infection and Immunity Project at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, spent 3 years at the biocontainment facility Australian Animal Health Laboratory between 2011 and 2014. The U.S. withdrew from controversial experiments that make pathogens more potent or likely to spread dangerous viruses in October of 2014, concerned it could lead to a global pandemic. The pause on funding for 21 gain-of-function studies was lifted in December of 2017. We have spoken about that in many programs, and Dr. Ralph Barich was the guy we have spoken about many times. He has been selected to reconstruct or to construct the SARS-CoV-2 virus from scratch. The point being that that program was a joint U.S. and Chinese program at the Wuhan Laboratory that for decades has been partnered with both the American Military Research Institute of Infectious Diseases and DARPA-backed programs from Duke University. That is in the aforementioned Whitney Webb article from the Last American Vagabond blog. The Rupert Murdoch Sydney Daily Telegraph article alleged that the Five Eyes electronic espionage network, that's the UK, US, Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, we've spoken about that many times, backed the story. That turns out not to be true. From The Guardian of May 4th of 2020 by Dan Saba, S-A-B-B-A-G-H, Five Eyes network contradicts theory COVID-19 leaked from lab. The sources also insisted that a, quote, 15-page dossier highlighted by the Australian Daily Telegraph, which accused China of a deadly cover-up, was not culled from intelligence from the Five Eyes Network. Skipping down. American scientists who have worked with the Wuhan Institute add its safety standards are comparable to Western equivalents. And wrapping up, Donald Trump has been pressing intelligence services to come up with a virus escape from the lab as a Chinese plague, etc., etc. From the New York Times of April 30th of 2020, by Mark Mazzetti, Julian E. Barnes, Edward Wong, and Adam Goldman, Trump officials said the press spies to link virus and Wuhan labs. In addition to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, guess who is behind this? Matthew Pottinger, the Deputy National Security Advisor who reported on SARS outbreaks as a journalist in China, pressed intelligence agencies in January to gather information that might support any origin theory linked to a lab. Matthew Pottinger is the son of J. Stanley Pottinger, close personal friend of George H.W. Bush, as deputy, as Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, accused in the book Death in Washington by Donald Freed and Fred Landis of having covered up the assassinations of Martin Luther King and Orlando Letelier, the latter a killing done under the Operation Condor program that was assisted by CIA. The head of CIA at the time Orlando Letelier was killed was the aforementioned George H.W. Bush, the man for whom CIA headquarters is named and who is a close friend of J. Stanley Pottinger. J. Stanley Pottinger was also the attorney for the Hashimi brothers in the October surprise maneuvering and also was Gloria Steinem's lover for 9 years. The fact that Gloria Steinem boasted of her past association with the CIA, saying that it was good journalistic training, did not dissuade her lover of 9 years, J. Stanley Pottinger, from going to bat for her, defending her against the notion that she was affiliated with the CIA. In Miscellaneous Archive Show M4, I pointed out that there are indications that Steinem's CIA career went well beyond what she owned up to in those interviews with the New York Times and the Washington Post. With Matthew Pottinger, whom I suspect may have followed his father into the agency, if in fact, as I believe Daddy-O is an agent, if Matthew Pottinger followed his father, and if his father in fact is in the agency, as I suspect, he is directing traffic for the Trump administration. I also think, as we go forward into the 2020 campaign season, that Tara Reid, who remains